Hello and welcome to the D2C Leaders podcast, a series brought to you by Commerce Centric. My name is Philip Driver, founder and CEO of Commerce Centric, the direct-to-consumer experts. And together with my guests, we will be deep diving the most important topics around direct-to-consumer and e-commerce. You will hear from the top leaders in their field on how they faced and overcame the big D2C challenges and their thoughts on the future of e-commerce. Learn what you need to stay ahead and to take your business direct-to-consumer. Hi, and welcome to another D2C Leaders podcast. Today, we've got Dwayne Bryan, head of e-commerce at Tom Sweeney. Really excited to get him on. He's been fighting the good fight for e-commerce for a long time, 15 years experience. But I won't steal his thunder. I'll let him kind of give a little bit of intro into kind of his background and current role. So welcome, Dwayne. Thanks for coming on the podcast. If you can give us a little bit of an intro into your background, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. So I guess my sort of long background is I've started off in sort of buying and merchandising, sort of traditional retail, and then part-time took a course in web design. And then over the course of maybe 2 to 3 years, ended up moving away from buying and merch and into what was becoming e-commerce at the time around 2003. So since then, I've done every possible role within e-commerce, from marketing to operations, supply chain, just because I've got that sort of firm grounding in the sort of the main chain of retail. It's kind of stood me in good stead to build a new sort of revenue channel that is e-commerce.
Yeah, and that, I think it looks like a focus for a lot of your roles is really just getting in there and making things happen for some of these direct-to-consumer brands, right?
Yeah. So it's, as I said, it's something that I kind of fell into. And then what became almost an unfortunate situation whereby I was brought in to do some firefighting, kind of evolved into a niche, I guess. And because, you know, whilst you're firefighting, you're sort of picking up all these varied skills and appreciation of different departments. And yeah, it's just ended up that that's been what I've been doing for the majority of it.
Mm-hmm. And current role, obviously you're building, again, from scratch, a new direct-to-consumer channel. I mean, what's the best advice you can give someone who's about to kind of do that, who's about to embark on just building direct-to-consumer from scratch?
I would say the easiest thing, best thing you can do is to get your scope right. Irrespective of your platform, budget, or the people you've got around you, if your scope's no good, your build will be no good, or it will be a lot harder than it needs to be. So if you can get all of the inputs sort of in a line, in a sense that you've got a very full and complete scoping document and everyone's bought into it on both sides of the coin, so internally, externally, all agencies, if everyone's bought into that and that's what you're delivering to, then I think that is the best way to get a sort of a smooth build off the ground.
Mm. And obviously, when you're doing that scoping, you're having to do a lot of translation in that kind of piece of work, right? Because you're dealing with developers who kind of like set variables. You know, they like to know exactly what they're going to do. And then you've got business owners who perhaps are not savvy in e-commerce or, you know, digital or, you know, development, because it's not their forte. You know, their forte is running that business, whatever that business might be. And they also have, you know, quite abstract ideas sometimes. So how do you kind of manage that? What's that translation process like?
So I think this is like the most intangible thing and probably the most valuable, in the sense that if you can take a straw man that's been drawn by someone in marketing and turn that into binary for a developer, it saves you so much time and headache and long hours, sort of, you know, being sort of fixing things or compromising on things. So I mean, I think it's
generally down to appreciation and having to sit in between the two. So having worked within buying merchandising, you know all of the thing inputs and outputs that you need sort of in order to get a bricks and mortar store or operation working, and you also know the inputs you need from marketing. You know, you sit in those meetings and you see how the ideas come about. So I guess it's just being able to then flip that on its head and say to the developers, this is what we're going for, this is what we need as an outcome, and then giving them the sort of the headspace and the bandwidth to be able to say, what about this, what about that, and then not be afraid to compromise on some things, and then but ultimately delivering the full picture.
Mm-hmm. And do you normally have a process for that, or is it kind of a bit more fluid than that? Is there something you kind of put in place to kind of make that happen?
Yeah, no process whatsoever. I mean, I don't think any two e-commerce builds are the same, even within the same company. So I think it just takes a level of flexibility, being able to think on your feet, and also keeping the bigger picture in mind when dealing with sort of the smaller sort of departmental areas within the build. So keeping in mind what you want to do internationally when you're talking about marketing, when you're talking about supply chain and fulfillment and all those sorts of things. So really keeping bigger pictures in mind whilst you're dealing with smaller pictures, and then also keeping that everyone else's department in mind when you're sort of moving things about, because I think that it's very easy to kind of sit in a meeting about fulfillment and operations and merchandising and then completely go away from what the business wants in terms of look and feel and on the front end and the processes and making it easy to shop. So it's just kind of balancing and plate spinning in reality.
Yeah. And I guess you're having to do some of that at the moment. So, I mean, talk me through this. So Tom Sweeney is, yep. Well, from outside, me and outsider looking in, I mean, it's quite one of the last bastions of traditional kind of areas, like men's bespoke tailoring, which to me kind of, you know, is very traditional. It's, you know, normally you would go into, you know, a Savile Row place to kind of get fitted and things like that, but they've taken this decision to kind of go direct to consumer with this area. So it's really interesting. It's still fashion, obviously we're used to seeing fashion online, but what's their approach to D2C? How have they approached that, or how have you approached that?
I think it's probably worth sort of outlining how the brand deals with the non-digital side of it before, because I'd say that the brand and the business that we have at the moment has very much been built on service and really having clients rather than customers, and people that will come into the store, they'll have a chat, they'll have, you know, there's a whiskey bar at both sort of shops at the moment, stores at the moment, and you know, they come, they spend time in the stores, and people come into the store for the experience as much as the output, i.e. the clothing that they're leaving with. And Tom Sweeney's got there's a whole background to how they tailor, how they cut and all those sorts of things. And that's kind of just interwoven into the experience. It's not a given, but it's one of the aspects that draws people to the brand. And then in terms of how we're dealing with that online, I'd say we're trying to maintain a level of service. So bleeding the offline services into the online world as much as we can, being available to the customer. I mean, there's going to be things like WhatsApp chat on the website. You're going to be able to speak to the tailors. You're going to be able to speak to the made-to-measure guys live. But then over and above that, it's just about good imagery, making it really easy to shop, being where the customers are. So if I think we're finding 60% of our traffic is coming through mobile. So absolutely, you're making the build a mobile first build, and from browsing to shopping to paying, everything needs to be really seamless and really easy to interact with, all the way through to sort of deliveries that they receive. So we're just really trying to make it as easy as possible to use, and just almost a non-concern. You know, it just kind of happens that you have a notion to go onto tomsweeney.com or .co.uk, and then you end up with a very nice looking delivery within a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you're bringing in that there's still that not face-to-face, but much more kind of tactile approach with having the WhatsApp group and being able to speak to the tailors. You're obviously trying, it's important, especially in this industry, to kind of keep that connection, that customer connection. Yeah. And obviously with D2C, rather than going through a retail partner or something, that's the benefit, right, of being able to do that, is build what's required for your brand around those things.
I mean, we're not talking about low ticket items either. So a lot of the time we're talking about what may be considered investment pieces to some people, or, you know, sort of considered purchases. And then also there's a level of detail that goes around buying a blazer. And if you're, you know, an aficionado and you know what you like and what you don't like about the cuts of a suit, and all those sorts of things, sometimes it's literally just a two-question conversation that says, what is the length of this? What is the length of that? How big is, you know, what is the gauge weave on this? You know, all those sorts of things. If we can just answer that via WhatsApp rather than necessarily setting up a customer services desk and having tickets created and all those sorts of things, it just gets it you so much closer to the purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. There's a lot of agility in that as well, obviously, for speed for the customer, because customer doesn't want to kind of go through ticketing systems and things. They just want to get the information across to you guys as quickly as possible, right?
Yeah.
So obviously you're in a niche area, but, you know, it's within online fashion. And how do you think, like, online fashion differs to other e-commerce stores that you might have managed in the past or other businesses you've been in?
I'd say online fashion has its own nuances. I guess the majority of us working within online fashion have kind of relied on being able to get people to buy stuff on impulse. So when we've done our marketing, have we been the most laser focused? Probably not. Because we've always been able to put something under the nose of, you know, with a broadcast that we know will get a conversion of single digit percentages. And it will be considered a measure of success. And I think that has been the main difference between probably fashion and, I'll go to the extreme other end of it, selling bathrooms to Bath Store. So Bath Store was very much needs based. You know, you don't shop for a bathroom if you're not really looking to buy a bathroom. And then similarly, you can't send a broadcast email and say, by the way, do you need a new toilet? It's not going to work. So I think the two, yeah, in a sense, fashion is very, still very much led by the impulse buy, and we sort of rely on the fact that you can never have too many of anything when you're talking about clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously we can't really talk this year about kind of online or retail without talking about probably the biggest disruption we've seen in, well, maybe the biggest disruption we've seen in our lifetimes in COVID. How's the COVID period been for Tom Sweeney?
Yeah, so first of all, we have a website now that didn't exist during when we went into lockdown. So my first task was get a website up and running, and I think we managed it within 4 weeks from scratch. So that was an immediate effect on the business. You know, we'd always planned to make and build a new website that was launching in time for autumn winter. and we were going to do it in a very slow and a very controlled manner, but retail being retail, I think it was a Wednesday morning, I went in and it was just, we need to build this website so that we can get product to customers that can't come into the store, that can't see all of the imagery, and ultimately we need to ship some units. I mean, and looking at sort of the stats around it, with like footfall being down 73% within May and like in the 50s for June, it's always going to mean that the digital side of things becomes more important. So yeah, we just threw the kitchen sink at it really, and got a website live, up and running. Everything was kind of done on the fly. Photography, we were managing via sort of FaceTime with the studio because no one was allowed in there. Building the website infrastructure and architecture over the phone, all that sort of thing. So yeah, it was a massive impact.
But, it's amazing what people can do when you need to, right? It's but I think the other thing is the technology these days obviously allows for that a lot more. And I think you talked about kind of getting a website from zero to, you know, launch in 4 weeks. I just don't think, you know, if we talk even 5 years ago, perhaps that would have even been possible, right?
The technology. We're talking 6 months. You know, it was like a standard timeline was 3 to 6 months. That, you know, and that was if you had everything in a row, ready to go, as and when it was needed, to hit every milestone, just meet every sign off, and all that sort of thing. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, they say necessity is the mother of all invention, right?
It certainly was there. And obviously you've built this new platform, you built that on, sorry, the built the new site on Shopify as the platform. What drew you to that platform?
Totally honest, it was what we were using in store already. Mm-hmm. So it was in situ. And without knowing the size of the e-commerce business and all, you know, without knowing anything, I'm very much of the opinion that if it's not broken, don't fix it. So if Shopify is in situ already, we're using it as a business already, why not just build on Shopify? And that's what we've done. It wasn't necessarily a conscious decision, but it wasn't completely without thought either.
Mm-hmm. So it was there, it was available, you know, the business has already kind of put that in and connected a few bits to it. So, and what was that experience like? I mean, have you used Shopify before, or was it kind of a new experience for you?
Yeah, I'll say fleetingly, I've used it. I think this is probably my third or fourth build that I'm on now. I wouldn't say, I mean, I think I'm close to double figures on Magento. But yeah, so in relative terms, I think, it's relatively new to me. But it ticks all of the boxes that I needed it to, in terms of being fast to market, all of those sorts of things. And if we've got, I think we had 18 months to 2 years worth of sales history within it. So it just made sense to sort of go with it.
Okay. Did you have a particular approach to building on Shopify? Was there, you know, a method that you kind of put in place to do anything?
No, not really. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily, I do things by a book or by the book. I normally just tend to go with what the situation needs and what the situation requires, because I guess, as you said, if we'd said 5 years ago or 2 years ago or even last year that we're going to build a website within 4 weeks and we're going to do it by the book, that book wouldn't have existed. The method I kind of employed was what needs doing and let's get it done really, and then move on to the next thing. And you know, that I think all of the milestones within a website build are the same. They may not come within the same order, but all have in the same shape, but they're pretty much the same, in the sense that you'll have the scoping, you'll have the build, you'll have the technical side of it, SEO, the catalog build, front end design, and then when it comes out, you've got QA, sort of handover period, and then go live, loosely speaking. But yeah, all of, as long as you hit all of the milestones, you'll get there in the end, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find it on Shopify? How did the build go? Was it smooth?
Yeah, so it was relatively smooth for a 4-week build. And in the background, we're working on another website, which is due to go live in September. So I was kind of working on two builds at the same time. I think the build on Shopify is relatively straightforward, especially coming from sort of enterprise builds, where you are sort of building truly bespoke from blank page. Shopify gives you a good, strong core to build out from. I guess it's just the case of whether you go with a theme-based build or you're doing a bespoke front end or anything like that. So we went for a theme-based build for the tactical site, and the strategic site that we're building in the background is a bespoke build. So I'm doing both.
I'd like to keep yourself busy there, two sites in one go.
I mean, it's not, as soon as I got the sort of the tactical site up and running, it then shows you how much the business needs to do in order to be ready for a strategic site, a bigger site that's potentially going to be six-figure site within 2 years. Six or seven-figure site, sorry, within 2 years. So having this smaller build in between has been a bit of a blessing in disguise, in a sense that it's kind of shown us, right, we need to change our processes behind the scenes. And again, that goes back to sort of the merchandising side of things and the business operations, and how do we interface with the finance department, and how do we interface with the wholesale and the merchandising side of things, that we've needed to really sort of pivot on quite quickly in order to get the new site in the right place, be able to sort of make the money that we wanted to and be the success we wanted to.
Yeah. But again, I guess the technology these days allows for that agility, right? That you've been able to spin up this almost a test. It's not a test, it's a store, the full store you've built, but it's still a learning site that perhaps, again, 5 years ago, it would have been quite, you know, any decision to go direct to consumer with an e-commerce platform is you know, would have been a very big decision with lots of investment. But in this case, you've been able to spin something up in 4 weeks, go to market and learn. But still then be able to commit to something bigger further down the line, albeit maybe it's on the same platform. But you've got to market very quickly, and you're making money, and you're learning things, and you're making data along the way.
Yeah, and I think I've always been, and again, sort of harping back to the origins of my career, I've always been analytics-based. And I've always kind of let the numbers and the analytics do a fair amount of the talking, and just seeing how people are moving around the site, where they're dropping off, and just generally how they're interacting with the site has then informed what we build the next time around. And as you say, we wouldn't have been able to get this level of insight from theory, or there was no quick way to sort of put a website up within months to be able to learn from, so that we don't get the big investment wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any tips and tricks about Shopify you can pass on? Anything you've learned kind of getting that build up so quickly?
I don't think Shopify is the hardest platform to build on. I mean, if you know roughly what you want to do and how you want to do it, and even if you don't know that, you can still get away with it. You know, there's a very comprehensive app store that exists, and can, you know, you can sort of pivot really quickly on on things about on how you approach things in terms of functionality that you would have just either had to say it's in scope or out of scope, leave it or don't. Previously, you can just almost throw a plugin at it and find something out. And I don't think anyone really builds on Shopify. You more configure your back end on Shopify. You build the front end on Shopify, but the back end is so robust, and you know, with all the apps, you don't really need to build anything. It's just about making choices and making sure it all works.
So you're basically kind of choosing whether to, on the fly, build or buy the features you want within there.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's if you've got a risk-averse approach, then an app is here today, gone tomorrow, versus building in the functionality from scratch. But then also the app can be the prelude to a bespoke build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, again, that's the beauty of that platform as well. It's kind of just the apps available to just test and try those different options. And then, yeah, if you want to build it, that's kind of where you push into it. One of the other things that's obviously very important, and I think probably increasingly important for you guys because you've got international stores, is obviously managing that international trade. And I think you are selling or at least delivering internationally. How are you managing cross border and within the platform for payments and shipping? You know, how's that handled?
Yeah, sure. So this has been a massive learning from this sort of smaller site to the bigger site. So at the moment, we've got a good client base within the UAE, and we needed to get a handle on what do we do with shipping duties and charges and all of those sorts of things. So now we are using Global E, and we will be using them going forward to manage the duties and charges on the fly. So building that into the site so the customers can see, that they will be paying the duty and charges. It will amount to X, and they have nothing more to pay for after making that initial purchase. Is I think it's not a barrier, but I think it can take the gloss off of an e-commerce purchase. And I think it happens here when you buy stuff from the US and it comes, and then you get a way bill or an invoice from the carrier to say you've got charges, or in some cases they hold what you've bought at the port. So I think that is it's a big area that can either encourage or discourage repeat purchases. So yeah, we've just interwoven it into the buying experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess again, it's just managing that. You don't want friction in any of that customer process, right? So the more friction you can take out, the better.
And absolutely. And
how about kind of payments and handling international payments? Is that you're using the platform for that, or anything special you're doing for that?
We're using Global E for that as well. And again, that's probably something else that I've learned sort of building on Shopify. If you can minimize the number of apps that you have to use, it makes your life a lot more simpler, because if you've got to go through an app to another app and all those sort of things, it can get a bit tricky. But I've minimized the number of apps that we're using on this build, and globally are managing the shipping customs calculation, and then they're also providing us with the international checkout, so customers will be able to pay in local currency, local language if they want to, and then pay in whatever currency they want to as well. So we are literally looking at anything that can minimize friction in terms of knowing the price of this in local currency versus trying to calculate it in your head or have a guess at what GBP is in your local currency.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that will help you in the future if you know, you continue with international growth, looking at new markets, you'll just kind of add those in the back end to kind of be, or maybe it's already switched on, I don't know, but have you got kind of countries in mind or a set route for internationalization that you're looking to follow?
Yeah, I mean, the guys have got a sort of a 3 to 5 year plan. And I guess the website and the analytics and the international orders will probably play a part in that. We've already got a store in the US. We have a store in New York. but should there be any hotspots that arise within the States, I can see us going to West Coast as well, you know, and also Middle East and Far East and those sorts of things. But I guess it's largely down to time and the appetite, really. And the website will be able to help with that sort of conversation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you talked about the stores there. So that's another of the big topics that comes up quite a lot in D2C. So it's mm-hmm. how you manage either, obviously, channel conflict or the store versus online relationship, and because that can be, can, you know, that again could be a point of friction between kind of what happens in store versus what happens online and things like that. How are you handling that at Tom Sweeney? Is there any, have you seen any impact around that, or is it too early to tell?
I'd say it's probably too early to tell. And in terms of sort of wholesale accounts, channel conflict, there's been minimal, because I think we've got three wholesale accounts. But the longer it goes on, the less I feel like channel conflict is a thing. Were we having this conversation 10 years ago, which seems a long time ago, I'd say channel conflict was a thing. I think with the advent of brands going direct to customer, retailers sort of falling by the wayside, sort of multiples sort of falling away, so things like Debenhams going away and all those sorts, and sort of those build a big warehouse and put the brands in it, that's kind of going away. So brands emerging onto e-commerce and emerging into retail, it's just a natural progression, I think. So I think channel conflict is somewhat decreasing, and what I've always done in the past in terms of managing channel conflict is give them a different proposition, you know, give people exclusives, give people colorways that other people don't have. So there is literally no conflict to be had. Mm-hmm. Where it does exist, I've generally tended to take the conflicting products or the conflicting activity away and enable everyone to sort of succeed at how they want to.
And how about the relationship between your own stores and online? Is there currently a connection, or is it something you're looking to build in? You know, is it shared stock, or I guess the product's bespoke though, so perhaps it's a bit more closer.
I mean, the website is 100% ready to wear. So there's no bespoke or made to measure. Well, made to measure will come in the future, but there's no bespoke sold on the website. So in essence, there's a level of the conflict being taken away, in a sense that if a customer wants a bespoke suit, they very much have to go into the store. Whilst they're in the store, they can still buy some ready to wear. But if we've got stores in London and they live in Manchester, guess what? You can use the website to still buy your ready to wear. So I think the store has its strengths and the website has its strengths. I think what's important is to make them complementary to each other, not in direct conflict or doubling up as much as you can sort of make it.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. So your job title is head of e-commerce, and you know, that's a job title we see a lot, obviously, in this area. But the thing that certainly I see is that this job title seems to be a catch-all for huge amounts of responsibilities. Sometimes they're not always connected to each other. So there's, you know, this varied responsibility of basically being a brand new business unit within a business. So what do you think are the core skills that a good D2C leader needs?
I think you need to be able to understand traditional retail so that you can hit all your milestones in terms of product selection from the main chain. So often I walk into a scenario or hear of a scenario whereby e-commerce has just been forgotten about in terms of getting them stock. So I think having the understanding of how far ahead merchandising work and when they need to place orders and when they need to allocate stock and how they need to allocate stock is an absolute godsend. And then it's just about understanding the interfaces that you have. You know, you've almost, as you said, you're almost running an entire business unit on sometimes, most of the time on your own. And how does that interact with finance? How does that interact with operations? If you're in a traditional wholesale business, what is the pivot to get to move from a pallet-based business to a single item leaving the back door? You know, there are so many different nuances within e-commerce that people just don't consider when they're sort of going about their business on a day-to-day basis. But then I think most important, you need to be able to explain digital environment to people who aren't from a digital environment and haven't had the sort of the exposure to digital, because it's such a hard thing to be able to do and have people who come from what I'd say traditional retail, where it's very tactile, it's very writing numbers down on pieces of paper and all that sort of thing, and really touching and feeling things, to then say, oh no, it's fine, we can do that online. It's such a big bridge to get, big gap to bridge. But if you can do that, then you're more than half the way there.
Yeah, it's just, you touched on something there. I was just laughing because I've seen that and experienced that before myself. And you would expect that the brand has its own stock and stock is available and stock would never be a problem. But actually, having stock for e-commerce, which can sometimes be a separate, like I said, business within the larger brand, can be one of the issues. Mm-hmm. And again, it seems to be one of the lesser talked about aspects of getting any kind of store, you know, obviously because you don't have product, you can't sell anything. But everyone thinks about the shiny front end. So managing that.
Even really simple things like a size break, a size run within e-commerce is completely different than it would be in store. E-commerce can sell and does sell the fringe sizes just as well as it does the core sizes. So even things like, you know, the traditional 1-2-2-2-1, sort of size break, it isn't necessarily the same within e-commerce, you know, because you're reaching so many different types of people, so many more people, you're likely to sell extra small, as likely to sell extra small as you are medium and large. So it's a complete change in mentality.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the biggest issues for D2C leaders are today?
The inverse of the core skills, I guess. It's not being understood, and also having businesses and brands understand that digital is all encompassing. It's not just your website, it's everything. You know, if someone's got a mobile, they're a digital customer. If someone's got a laptop, they're your digital customer as well. And how do you ensure that your traditional retail customer, in air common, is becoming a digital customer, and that is something that most brands just don't have a handle on, and so I think that's one of the biggest sort of issues or challenges that any sort of any digital professional has in sort of daily life, I guess.
Good. So we talked about, you know, you've worked in various different environments, and you've been around, you know, 15 years of experience in e-commerce, which, you know, there's been a lot happening there. What are the major changes that you'd call out in that kind of 15-year period? You know, what's the major changes you've seen around direct consumer and e-commerce?
Obviously, there's penetration. There's number of people who are using websites. I mean, I was thinking about what was 2003 like, and to put into context, Facebook wasn't around. Everyone's social media was MySpace. I think I had a quick look, and there were 40 million active websites in 2003, and now in 2020 there are 400 million, and there's about £3 trillion being spent on e-commerce. So I think the uptake in e-commerce has just been the biggest change. And mobiles have been huge. Again, iPhone wasn't around when I started. Smartphone wasn't around. We are still selling CDs. So yeah, I'd say the retail environment and the outlook has completely changed. And I think linked to it, the way that we live has changed, because I mean, if you can imagine a world without WhatsApp now, I don't know what anyone would do, you know, or Google Maps on your phone. I mean, people are so disorganized now, because you know you can fix it on the fly if you've got your phone. So I guess the whole world and the way that we live has completely changed. E-commerce has changed. We've seen big websites come. We've seen them go fairly quickly. So think places that I've worked, for instance, Woolworths, gone. And we've seen like a divergence, in the sense that brands have come to the fore, and a lot of single branded stores, direct to consumer, but all the while Amazon has been there. So obviously they're doing something right. But yeah, I just think it's gone full circle. We've gone really small websites, really big websites, and now we've gone back to sort of boutique-y websites that are coming from direct from the brands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing the amount of change in such a short amount of time. And I think, the other aspect of that is just the rate of change that we see. Do you think there's a way that businesses can try to stay ahead of that change? You know, with yourself, you know, how do you keep on top of trends with technology?
Generally, just have a good network of people around you in terms of e-commerce, because I think with digital professionals being misunderstood within businesses, I think we are quite good at networking and speaking to other people and making sure that we're not going crazy in sort of thinking that we should have our own stock and all those sort of things. So I mean, as a community and as a sort of skill set, I think we are quite good at sharing. And then also, because of the nature of the beast, we are quite close to a website, and we do see things change. And when there's a new piece of tech, there's a new piece of functionality, we are quite quick to do research on it and say, does it fit? Do we need it going forward? And then also sort of keeping an eye on it and saying, putting into a longer term roadmap for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You touched on something just before then about kind of the different things you'd seen, and one of them was the rise of D2C. Do you think that's a trend that will continue? Are we going to see D2C continue to grow?
Yes, I can't see it going any other way, really, especially the way that people have almost been forced to use websites whilst in lockdown. That has been a massive shot in the arm for e-commerce. And you've had brands that didn't ever consider e-commerce, massively leaning on e-commerce, scrambling to get websites, scrambling to get their product on a platform. So I think it will continue, and just grow. How big, I don't know. I mean, it'll be as big as the economy is, I guess.
Okay. And just finally, if we were going to pass you the crystal ball for a second there, what are your predictions for the future of online retail? Is there anything we should be looking out for or thinking about?
I don't think I can predict tech trends, but I think e-commerce will get quicker. It's been getting quicker sort of every year. I think the lines between online and offline will blur a bit more, even more so than they have been. I think something that's been an undertone for a long time, in a sense that people have been talking about it, but it's never quite come to fruition. I think kiosk shops will end up being the thing whereby no one sort of employs stock in a back room on Oxford Street. They have a showroom that you can very easily buy from and have the stock delivered to you same day, next day, all those sorts of things. I can see that happening more so than it is now, just on a convenience level. And also, you know, you can have a sort of a bigger catalogue available offline as you do online. So those are the real sort of the key things that I think will continue developing from this point.
Dwayne Bryan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think it's very rare to find someone who's kind of as quite as hands-on with e-commerce, and obviously been around a long time, got lots of experience. So thanks so much for coming on. I think we'd love to have you back again in the future. You know, perhaps if people want to kind of deep dive any of those areas you've talked about. If anybody does want to hear Dwayne again, obviously let us know. But for now, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been good fun.